We're on the air, just in time.
Phew.
Welcome to The Goose, after that long play-in. I hope you enjoyed all of the theme tune that time as we tried to figure out what the hell was going on.
But we figured it out.
Just the two of us.
And also, it's just the two of us, and Mark Canton just slipped his very own microphone condom onto his microphone.
I brought my own microphone cover today because I am a little ill.
Oh.
But I've soldiered in because I know the 100,000 fans.
Yeah, the fans want you.
We've been missing for like two episodes now.
Yeah, because we were off having adventures.
We were off having adventures.
Yeah.
Hey, so I'm sick, right?
Yeah, because too much adventuring will do that to a person.
Too much adventuring. Now, I gave blood on Friday.
Oh, God.
So I had to ring up.
Don't talk about veins.
Okay. That's not the important part.
Okay.
But I had to ring up today and say, hey, I'm sick now, so maybe you have to throw that blood in the bin. So he said they'd look into it. But then the guy said to me, has this happened to you before? And I said, no, it hasn't happened before. But now I'm starting to doubt it, that maybe sometimes when I give blood, I feel sick a few days afterwards.
Do you think it's because it takes away all of your good blood cells? And
I don't know. Or something in the operation just makes me feel run
maybe
down.
Maybe you are allergic to being charitable.
That is probably true. Because I have not done the ice bucket challenge yet, despite what Rory Brosnan says on the subject.
Well, did you give money?
No.
Well, then you have to do the ice bucket challenge.
Is one or the other?
Yeah.
Oh, is that people getting out of giving money?
Yeah, but I think most people will do both.
I would rather have ice cold water on me than give money to this stinky charity. That is actually a lot crueler and more mean-spirited than it looked like at first.
Yeah.
So they're just taunting people.
Yeah, but they actually are doing, they're doing both. But it started off as one or the other.
Oh.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, have you ever, do you get that where somebody says something to you and then you're like, no, and then you start to doubt yourself?
Yeah, I had this experience when I was living in London about 7 years ago where old family friends, people I didn't really know, I went to their house once for dinner. They had some kids my age, but they weren't really around. Anyway, had dinner with them. It was lovely. And we talked about how it was going to be my 25th birthday party and the theme for my 25th birthday party, because when you're in London, everyone does fancy dress parties. You have to have themes for everything, right? So the theme for my 25th was the sublime and the ridiculous. I really didn't know what that meant. I just liked the words together.
And
I think it actually still probably does describe me a little bit. Anyway.
What exactly does it mean? Apart from just those words.
Sublimely ridiculous, ridiculously sublime. I think I like the idea that someone is sublime in their ridiculousness.
Yeah.
That's, for me, that's what it means.
Yeah, okay.
As opposed to ridiculously sublime, because I think that's looking up your own asshole a little too much.
Well, if somebody did do that,
they would be sublimely ridiculous. Anyway, and then I saw them once again, and I remember having this conversation with the mother of the family, that she had this amazing gold dress that she thought would be perfect for this fancy dress party. And that was sort of the last of it. Like, I don't remember taking the dress. I just remember having this long conversation about how it might be perfect. I don't remember taking it. I don't remember ever putting it on me. And I definitely did not wear it to the party. But about 4 years later, my mom met them for lunch in London, and she asked for her dress. She was like, how come Annie hasn't given my dress back? So mom called me and was like, do you have her dress? And I was like, no. But then for about three months,
still in the news.
I was like, And I was trying to think, like, did I completely block taking this woman's dress?
Yeah.
and just not wearing it to the, because I probably knew that I wouldn't have worn it. It's not, anyway, so I had this real, and even today, if I think about it, it feels like a real head fuck. Like maybe I did, and I've just completely blocked it, but I don't know where the dress would be.
So hammered in that dress.
But yeah, even the getting it home, like I'm sure I would have thought about it, or packing up to leave London. I'm sure I'm not the kind of person who doesn't return things either. So, but that's still something that fucks with my head.
So email in, folks, if you have seen the gold dress.
If you know where my gold, that gold dress is, we'll try to get it
I'm
back
sure
to her.
You get that a Garda report or something.
Yeah. But anyway, so if the guys come back and say that they're going to toss your blood out, do you think that means you have something like really wrong with you?
I don't know. Yeah, I suppose they'll tell me if there's something. I did have a think about that a while ago. I was wondering if I had diabetes, and then I said, oh no, because they'd find out every time I donate blood.
Yeah.
So I'm
You would know that. Why did you think you had diabetes?
Because I was pissing a lot. And
was it dark brown?
Somewhere on the internet it said, oh, maybe you got diabetes.
Was it maybe?
No, it was a variation of things. And I went to see the doctor. And
it's
it was
because
fine.
You're getting old and you're having problems with your prostate.
Yeah. I went to this show. This was years ago.
Oh.
I went, I took a piss before I left. I arrived in the theater. I took a piss. I sat through the first hour. After half an hour, I was dying for another piss.
What were you drinking?
Not a lot. You know me.
Maybe you just have a tiny bladder.
No, maybe it's getting smaller. Maybe I've got a shriveling bladder.
Mm.
It's just sometimes I have these attacks of like it'll save up all my piss and then just won't let out. So I almost had to run out during the show, but I managed to wait till the interval, dying, went, took a piss.
Was it the kind of having to pee where like you can't fully stand up because you're worried if you fully stretch your body out, the pee will just come out? Sometimes I've gotten out of cars where you kind of have to like just stay a little bit hunched over as you walk because if you tilt your pelvis the right way, the pee is just going to come out.
Well, did not for me. And then the second half of the show, I needed to piss again.
Oh, Jesus, what's wrong with you?
4 pisses in like 2.5 hours or something.
I'm sorry to hear that. And I'm sorry you're ill today, but I want to hear about your time in the big schmoke.
Well, I was going to tell one more story about disbelieving myself.
Oh, okay, fine.
If that's all right. Actually, now that I'm killing talking about London, I'm not sure the story is that good. But Tiny Place for Ireland is like a selection of 20, I think, short plays that they're all
like really short,
3 to 5 minutes
really short.
Long.
Really short.
So they did Tiny Place for Ireland. Fish Amble did Tiny Place for Ireland.
1 and 2. 1.
And then the next year, and I meant to submit it, and then I just never got around to it. So the next year it was coming around again, and they were using a selection of the plays from the first collection, a new selection of the ones that I didn't get around to, but they had a couple of open spots. So Gavin Kostick emailed me and said, hey, would you be up for writing a tiny play for Ireland? We're just looking for like a comedy one, and we think you'd be good for that. So, yeah, I said, no problem. I wrote 2. One of them later became a sketch with me and Cathy Rose O'Brien about communism. But then the other one was just like lots of tiny vignettes. So they were all 1 minute long. So like tiny plays are all 3 to 5 minutes long. Oh, sorry. Mine were all 1 sentence long. All these 1 sentence long things. And I thought to myself, after I wrote it, I thought, this would actually be a pretty good opening to the show. Semi-egotistical. But I sent it in. And then lo and behold, it was the opening to the show. And I thought, You did it again, Kenton.
You did it again, Kenton.
You got it right. And so then there was a Q&A session this one time in front of an audience. I was
after
there,
the
a couple of other
on.
Writers. It was before the show, I think.
Okay.
And Gavin turned to me and he said, so Mark, most of the shows were written beforehand, but we actually came to you and said, we need an opening for the show. Have you got any ideas? And I was like, I said to him, oh, I don't think you did ask me for an opening for the show. I just kind of wrote it and then it became the opening of the show. And he was like, oh, okay. But then as the interview was going on, I just started to tell myself, I was like, oh my God, they totally did. And I just forgot about it, and I'm congratulating myself for writing, you know, what I knew this would be the opening. No, they asked me for the opening, you fucking
idiot. And that's why you thought about it. But I wonder, like,
but
if they
then
said,
I went back and checked the emails, and I didn't. They didn't ask me for the opening. They just asked me for another one, and I wrote it anyway.
Oh, because I was wondering if they'd asked you for the like a comedic opening, and you just heard comedic and not opening, except your subconscious took it in.
Yeah, no, I went back over the emails. Gavin Costick had managed to fool himself into believing that he had asked for an opening.
It was a reverse. It was a double reverse.
Yeah.
The old double reverse foolingness.
Yeah.
But I just heard recently that if you're in an argument with somebody, you need to be really clear about what you're arguing about, whether it is like you just want to be right, so you're going to argue the point.
Yeah.
Versus wanting to sort out the argument.
Yeah.
And I'm the kind of person who always wants to be right to the point where if I was disproved via email in that way, it's
you'd
like
find something else to argue about.
Yeah.
Or
I'd change it into some way of like, oh, well, I thought we were talking, you know, like,
it's a very
bad habit.
Yeah. It's difficult to do. It's difficult to just admit you're wrong. I'm not very good at it.
No, most people aren't.
Davey Banks is good at it.
But he needs to because he's wrong all the time.
Like, sometimes Davey will say something to me and I'll come back with a rebuttal and he'll be like, you're completely right. I'm completely wrong. I'm like, well, for a man who likes arguing.
And do you think that makes him a more fun person to banter and talk to? Like, is it satisfying when he does that?
If you can find a way of shutting him up. I mean, shutting him down, shutting him up, it's a lot better, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't know what I was going to say there about arguments.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, though.
So, we've both been traveling.
Yep. You were sort of, you more like went to a place and stayed there for a while.
Yeah, but I had a question about traveling. What do you do when you're traveling? I'm not someone who travels a lot.
Mm.
And so I was in London for 3 weeks. My show was on at night. I was staying in New Cross. I was staying in this guy's flat.
New Cross?
New Cross. It's down south, east. And staying in this guy's flat. He was up in Edinburgh directing a show, so I just had his room for relatively cheap, which was very nice of him. But I brought my bike over with the set.
Whoa.
Yeah, did you not know that? So
no.
I was cycling around London. And so I got... flew into Heathrow, went to the theater. We had a little bit of rehearsal or something. Then we went for a drink.
You picked up your bike?
I picked up my bike and then I cycled back to New Cross with all my gear, like 3 weeks worth of clothes. That was pretty heavy to cycle to somewhere I didn't know. It was like
and that's a far
50
cycle.
Minutes, an hour or something cycling with this heavy bag on my back. But I got there and then I opened up the door And the first room I saw, the first bedroom I saw, was disgusting.
Oh, no.
Apologies to Ben's flatmate, Nick. But is that his name? Shit, no, might have got his name wrong.
And was he there as well?
No, he wasn't there. Oh, so there was just a disgusting bedroom. And then the other bedroom, the door was closed. So I was thinking, if I go into this bedroom, is the flatmate going to be in there?
Yeah, sound asleep.
Sound asleep or far worse, who knows?
Yeah. Dead.
Yeah, do I have to sleep in the disgusting bedroom? But then eventually I just plucked up the courage and opened up the other door. And
how did you know it was my next room? Because you smelled his underpants?
Yeah, and I knew what he did for a living. And so I knew what kind of smell
underpants
that would produce.
Yeah, fair enough.
So that was my... Yeah, my room was lovely and clean.
Lovely.
So that was all fine.
Phew, thank goodness.
Yeah.
And then how did you find cycling around London?
It's okay. It was cycled a long way.
Yeah.
Like,
that's a big distance.
At least an hour and a half every day. Some days I would cycle in and out a couple of times. So there were some days I would cycle 3 hours.
Wow.
Which was tiring.
Well, I was cycling 4 to 5 hours every day for five and a half days.
Mm-hmm.
I cycled from Vienna to Budapest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Through Slovakia, mostly, along the Danube. And I couldn't think, and I still can't, off the top of my head, what is the tune to Blue Danube?
don't know.
That classical.
Write
music.
In, folks. Please send someone, us an email.
Send us an email with the with just piano. The if you could just write it in the da 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 that kind of style, like DADA or TATA, then we might be able to get it. Yeah, da 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 da. And it was so frustrating because we were cycling along this huge river the entire time, and I couldn't think of the tune to Blue Danube.
Yeah.
Oh, frustrating, but it was fantastic and really fun. And I would consider myself a fit person.
Yep.
And I cycle around Dublin, but I hadn't ever done any cycle that was up to 60K.
Mm.
And
that is a long way.
After the first day, which was, that's Vienna to Bratislava, I was wrecked.
Yeah.
My little thighs were on fire. Not to mention
oh,
our bones.
Thighs.
Yeah, my thighs.
Right, yeah.
Like front lower thighs.
Mm.
But then I realized...
That was because of what Connor was doing to you.
Yes.
Yeah. He slaps you on the knees.
He slaps me on the knees all the time, especially to like keep me going. No, I was in third gear.
You never changed the gears?
I like had it in like the low third gear, but because it was flat the whole time, I didn't really notice it. But so, actually, that was probably...
So that meant your legs were going around faster or slower?
Slower, but pushing harder.
Yeah.
And also we
but
had
that means
packs.
You're going faster.
So we each had about... I don't know, an extra 10 pounds on our bikes, maybe? Maybe not quite that much.
A
lot of protein bars. but it was actually great fun, and I highly recommend it. It's a great way to travel, especially through Slovakia, where there's no way to... there's nothing really to see.
Oh.
Like, they're beautiful little towns, and it's nice, and the food is fantastic, but there's not, like, museums to go to and ancient churches to see, and there's no culture as such.
This is my problem, okay? In London, a lot of free days, which I should have been writing, but I wasn't. Well, I just... Museums...
Free?
Just bore me. Like, I just can't get into them. Like, it's like... Say you're reading a good book.
Yeah.
It's interesting, some interesting facts there. And then somebody took it, and every three sentences, threw them around a warehouse, and after you go and find these sentences... And then the blah, 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 blah. All right, walk over here now. Oh, Jesus Christ. You know, why can't we just sit down, read this information, and then just fuck off?
You can.
I don't get anything.
Usually they have a brochure where it tells you about the show.
Maybe I should just sit in the lobby and read that.
Yeah.
But I don't get anything from, like, seeing the actual dress that some Mandarin woman wore, you know?
Right. So were you at the Victoria and Albert Museum, or?
Correctly identified. There was a
ding ding. What did you win, folks?
There was a selection of dresses. Yeah.
Why did you go to a show of a selection of dresses?
Well, no, it wasn't a show. I was just wandering around the V&A.
Oh, okay. Well, the V&A is that kind of museum. It's a historical museum.
Yeah, yeah, but any of them, science museum.
You should have gone to the Natural History Museum.
There was a big queue. I've done the Natural History Museum, and the only thing that excites me in the Natural History Museum is the blue whale. You go in, you look at how fucking big that is, and then you're done. What else is there to see?
I like the skeletons.
Really?
Yeah. And I
just don't know how long I can stare at them.
Hmm. Fair enough. I love the V&A, but my favorite museum in London that is, used to pass through it because it's free to go in and it's an easy pass through. It was on my way to walking to school when I was there, is the Portrait Gallery, because they have portraits of very famous people and lots of kings and queens and stuff. And that is a good story. Because
it's funny to see how funny they looked.
Mm-hmm. It is funny to see how funny they looked. No, but it's fascinating because you can sort of build your own stories around what these people were. But there's always... Anyway, I love portraits, so maybe that's why I like it.
Well, I was looking today, distracted on Wikipedia as usual, and I was looking at pictures, a portrait of George IV. And it seemed to be the style at the time... That his head is absolutely tiny on this giant
tiny
body. Yeah, I'll pull it up.
Was he not wearing a wig or something like that? Was that the time they were wearing wigs? What year was... What are we talking about? Is this like George from George in Dublin times?
George the Third went mad, and then after him, George the Fourth, played by Rupert Everett or something.
Played by Rupert Everett in the film. We always end up talking about films.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't look so bad in that one.
No,
actually.
that looks sort of fine. Okay. Was it just a where you were standing in relation to it?
The computer. I was just looking on the computer.
Oh, right.
I don't know. Maybe it's just the amount of refinery he has. Yeah. Look at the size of his neck.
He is really decorated.
Look at the size of his neck.
Yeah, that's...
It's just like a pole with a tiny head on top.
Yeah.
And these massive robes.
And the tights. I just find the tights hilarious because I don't know that even if I were living at that time, I would look at that and be like, that is a manly, sexy man. Like, the guy is wearing skirts and tights.
He is. You know, high heels used to not be worn by women. They were worn by men.
Yeah.
That turns you on, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I don't, it's a funny one. But having just said that, I do think men have very attractive legs. And I don't like the fashion that's in right now of these baggy sort of cargo-y type shorts that go down below the knees. So, like, when dudes are walking around, like, you only really see their calves or their... And I know people think that men who are wearing short shorts look stupid, but if they have nice legs,
yeah,
they should be in short shorts.
It as a heterosexual man who maybe is afraid of his own sexuality, it disturbs me to see a hairy man's legs. Just, oh, I remember Ian Russell had a launch of his book that he had edited. And it was upstairs in the Arts Block in Trinity. It was kind of a fancy launch. But then, for some reason, Dave Comfort was there in the shortest shorts and hiking boots. Everyone else is dressed in ties and stuff. And
Comfort's
there just with his hairy legs. This is great.
Oh, God. Yeah, that would be. I don't know. Yeah, I have a friend whose husband wears very short, quite tight shorts all the time. And that's always a little bit like... I feel a little bit uncomfortable about the fact that...
I can see your giblets.
I can see your giblets. But I don't know why we should feel uncomfortable about that. Because that just is what happens. And what was your most favorite thing about London?
Well, my most favorite thing was the thing I did. I went to see a show by an American group called Baby Wants Candy. They're an improv group. They did an improv show, much like Goose would do at the start. And then the second half, they improvised a musical.
Whoa.
So they... I thought I told you about this, so I wasn't going to bring it up. But so they get the title of the show at the start of the second half, and people are just shouting out. So they give kind of examples. I can't remember what the examples were, but they usually give, like... an existing thing with a pun. So, Whack Beth, or...
Oh, yeah, okay.
I'm trying to think of the title of anything else. So, No Country for Old Dens. Something like that.
Gotcha.
So, they said that, and then people were shouting out, like, Michael Jackson is in my attic. The guy was obsessed with that, and any suggestion they were looking for, that's what he was shouting.
The whole thing, Michael Jackson is in my attic?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So they were like, okay, maybe this is one. Oh, what did I hear over there? And just as in that pause, somebody shouted out, Willy Wanker and the Cocklet Factory. and that was
done.
It.
Done.
It was absolutely
brilliant. It's a
winner. So it was just foul, like just dirtiness from start to finish. One of the songs was, Cock, brum, a wee like cock.
And they make up the song.
They make up the story, like they were roughly following Willy Wonka. They were roughly following Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. We saw Charlie and he's obsessed with cocks, and he was trying to find the golden ticket to get into the Chocolate Factory. And then they had like Mike VD, and they had other characters.
Yeah,
I can't remember any
Mike
of the characters
VD,
in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Veruca Salt said it was
Violet.
It was genital salt or genital warts. I don't know what it was. So they make up all the songs and all the lyrics and everything. There's a band playing and they'll try and, you know, work with the band to...
Amazing.
So they start a scene, and then the guy playing piano will kind of come in with a bit of a tune, like he's feeling what the song feels like, and then they'll start singing. One of the scenes was Willy Wanker, and he's talking to his right-hand man, who happened to have a huge wang. And then one of the other guys started playing his wang. He put his arm through the other guy's legs and was playing his huge wang.
God.
I can't remember what they were saying, but it was a beautiful moment of just, like, snapping right on something and going with the flow. And that was kind of what the whole thing felt like, where they were saying, oh, you know, well, your massive dong has been through so much, and And the guy said, well, yeah, if cocks could talk. And straight on the money, the other guy was like, if cocks could talk, I would ask them for an answer. It was brilliant. So at the end, they said, by the way, we're doing workshops over the weekend. So there are things, there's a couple of places available, so come on down. So I went down to the workshop last Sunday.
Nice.
And yeah, like,
you told me about going to the workshop, but I didn't hear about the
actual
the show. Yeah.
So we've never done musical improv.
No.
And I've never been...
it's not too late to start.
It's not too late to start. Because terrible at rhyming. Like, in the early days of the workshop, they were like, okay, let's just play some simple rhyming games. Couldn't do it at all. I was just
really
absolutely.
I'm surprised at that, Canton. I'm very good at rhyming.
Really?
Yeah, I used to do a thing when Connor and I were first together, and I thought it was sweet and endearing, and I think he probably thought it was, knowing Connor now as I know him,
really,
he's really not a morning person at all, so this must have been particularly
crazy.
Annoying. I would do a morning rap and just talk about what was going to happen at the day, how I felt in the morning, because I'm definitely a morning person, so I would wake up and do a quick little rap,
and well, he would wake up after you would have your face 1 inch from his, just rapping at him.
Yep, that's how I would do it. And then the a few days after we got engaged, we hadn't told a lot of people that we were engaged, and we were going to roll, as Larry Ryan would say, a soft launch. But we were going to roll it out and tell as many people as we could face to face, and then eventually send a big email to everybody who we didn't tell face to face. And I woke up one morning with five stanzas of limericks explaining how we got engaged, like just in my head.
Yes.
Done.
Yes.
So I think that I could be down with doing this musical situation. And also, one of my pastimes as a young girl growing up in Los Angeles without many friends was to stand on my patio and look over the pool and the orange trees and just sing about how great my life was going to be. Really. And I would just sing. I would sing for about 20 minutes, like one song for a bit, and I would just make it up as I went along.
About how great your life is going to be.
Yeah. And do you know what the thing is I don't,
it's all come true. Word for word.
Word for word.
Yeah.
Dublin, Ireland.
Connor McCarthy.
Yeah. Yeah. With long legs and no tan, that kind of thing.
Okay. That didn't rhyme. That wasn't good at all.
Man, tan.
Okay. You're rhyming not the last word in the sentence.
Yeah. You pick it up wherever you got to pick it up.
There was an exercise we did where somebody gives you a word in the circle and you just have to list very plainly as fast, as many words you can without going, or thinking about it too much, that rhyme with that word.
Okay.
And then you free associate off that word to another word and pass it to somebody else. So somebody gave me shoot or something. I can't remember. And I said boot, loot, hoot, galoot.
Toot.
And then I couldn't think of any more. And then, well, they kind of laughed at galoot because it was all English people. And afterwards, I wanted to be like, by the way, galoot is an actual word. That's a good rhyme, by the way. I thought of galoot.
What is galoot?
It just means you idiot. You big galoot.
Is it?
Yeah.
I've never heard that.
Yeah. So, good for rhymes. Put that in rhymezone.com.
Get that in there.
Yeah.
Galoot is good.
Yeah. So, avid fans will remember that I played a song from my album, and I'm not good at rhyming, so there's a thing called rhymezone.com, and like, all of my
you
songs.
You were just there, you were like, oh.
It's like, okay, well, rhyme to this. All right, well, maybe we'll make
it. Yeah, interesting. And the thing about writing songs, though, is that since my early productivity, writing 20-minute long songs in my garden, I don't write any songs now.
That's because you have no future.
I have no future anymore. Yeah. This is it.
You achieved everything, and now...
Yeah. Yeah. I used to write epic...
Someday I'll be on a podcast.
...songs, and now nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. I sing other people's songs.
Hmm. Well, give it
so
a go.
So this could change. This could change everything. This could
musical
bring me
wedding.
Back. Da-da-da-da-da. All the speeches are different songs.
Let's take a song.
Yeah.
Our subject that we're going to get onto for the second half of the show is literature.
Well, books mostly.
Okay.
But let's start with books and not literature, because that sounds a bit stuffy.
Okay, just books.
Books.
Well, I was looking for songs that were inspired by works of art or works of novels. And this song is called The Infant Kiss by Kate Bush. She also wrote Wuthering Heights, of course. But this one, I thought maybe people hadn't heard before. So let's take a listen to this. It's disturbing.
I say goodnight, night. I took him in tight.
I mean, it's a good song anyway, even if you could or couldn't hear that.
The Goose! The Goose!
I can't remember. So, it's about, it's based on a novel, and it's about this woman whose husband dies, and then she feels like her husband's soul is inhabiting this young boy, and she starts falling in love with this young boy.
Whoa. Yeah,
it's a good song.
Wow.
Kate Bush, she's gonna go there.
Wow. But you know what, that's like a lot of the early folk music, you know, Joan Baez and stuff, and Joan Collins. They were all singing about like these epic long folk songs that were like stories that were actually already existed. They just put them to music, basically. Like Mary Hamilton. And there's one about the Ballad of Mary Magdalene, like all that kind of stuff, like that, like before Bob Dylan came along and start writing all of his own stuff.
Well, did he?
But did he? Did Shakespeare?
Yeah.
Who
Bob
knows?
Bob Dylan has a quote about if you, it's on a video called "Everything Is a Remix" or something like that. That if you want to write a new song, just take an old song, and where they go up, go down, and where they go down, go up, and then you got a new song.
New song.
Yeah.
Ding. Yeah, I think that's fine. Art is stealing things all the time, so.
Yeah, novels, Annie. Hit me with them.
Hit me with your novels. So, no, I was just thinking, we talk a lot about films, but I thought it might be interesting to talk about books and some of our favorite books, and I was thinking today just about sort of heroes and villains and what we as a society think of as heroes and villains and what books sort of infiltrate society in a way that everybody knows about them. So if you make references to something, people know what you're talking about. Because if I said like Gatsby, you know what I'm talking about.
Not really, because I haven't read it. He's
a rich
guy.
You know that it's a book.
Yes.
Sort of that's what I like. You know that it's exists as a book.
Yeah.
And I don't think there have been very many books necessarily in my lifetime that have that kind of weight to them.
Well,
you know, in terms of like what everybody's read them or knows character names.
Do you know that actually you're wrong?
Okay.
That people are reading more books now. This is a fact I got 10 years ago, so maybe it's changed.
Okay.
People read more books now than they did 100 years ago, but of less diversity.
Mm.
So everybody's reading the same book, Harry Potter or whatever.
But see, I think Harry Potter's a good example of what I was about to say, which is that I think children's books and literature for young people infiltrates society a lot more than books for adults.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that, like, you grow up with and you carry the characters with you.
Yes. There's a larger market as well, because they can be enjoyed by kids and by adults.
Yeah, but I guess that's the key. You have to have it be enjoyed by kids and adults at the same time.
Yeah.
So, but is that the key for anything to be good?
Well, not necessarily good, but popular.
Yeah.
They're making a hell of a lot of films these days that are on violent subjects, but they have to keep any violence out of it. Like, I was listening to How Did This Get Made, and they were talking about Sucker Punch, where nobody actually gets killed in Sucker Punch because they wanted to keep it to PG-13. So it's a movie about violence, but they just have to kill robots and stuff the whole time. The actual humans can't get harmed.
Oh.
Yeah, and nobody can swear and all that kind of stuff.
No, I like swearing. I'm okay with swearing.
Yeah.
But the book... Mark just gave me my book back that someone else had even borrowed.
Yeah.
Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn.
Had given back to me ages ago for me to give back to Annie, but I
hadn't. This was back in early June.
I had to text Annie and say, by the way, I've got that book just in case you hate Aoife for not giving you that
book. Yeah, and I wouldn't have ever hated Aoife for not giving it back, but I would have been...
You wouldn't have talked to her ever again.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not. And I would have said bad things about her behind her back.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of person I am.
And that's the kind of person that she is.
So, but I finished it on my Kindle, and I'd never read Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, and I think that is a book that people of the generation before us would have grown up, most people would have read and known the stories of and known about that.
Yeah, I guess because they didn't have films. I mean, they talk about Rudyard Kipling like he was a superstar, and because of... The novels that he wrote were just so hugely popular.
Yeah.
Whereas, that would be replaced by films these days.
Yeah. Have you read the Just So stories?
Speaking
of Kipling?
Yes. I think as a child.
Are you lying?
Which ones are those?
Are you going to think now that you have read them?
Elephant got its trunk.
Rhinoceros got its skin. Yeah. Leopard got its spots.
Yeah, well, I can't remember all of them, but...
Deep, dark Zambezi River, yeah.
As a child, yeah.
But I think that it's very hard to become a reader if you don't grow up reading books or have people reading you books a lot.
Sure, yeah.
Because when we were on the bike trip, once we left Bratislava, the deal was no Wi-Fi until we got to Budapest. So we had 5 days of no email, no Instagram, neither of us does Facebook, but that kind of thing. Mm. So we were reading our books and playing cards and just generally it was really great. And it was nice because actually reading is it's so nice to get sucked into a book in that way.
Yeah.
And be traveling with a book that you're excited to read all the time, as opposed to just reading it before you go to bed.
This is the slight problem. Well, not necessarily with our topic, in that I find it very difficult to get into books as well as museums. Mm. Well, particularly novels. It's rare that I will be excited to read a novel. Some factual books.
What do you not like about it?
They're just long and boring. Like, so many novels, I'm just going to... just talk for ages and won't really have anything to do with anything and let's see what happens.
I don't think so many novels are like that.
Seems like that to me.
Okay.
Where I'm like, this isn't moving the story along. Why are you explaining what this lake looks like?
That's why you should, like, Tolstoy does that. That's his thing.
What?
Not moving the story along.
Yeah, well, I've never read Tolstoy.
Just describing.
Never will.
But I would say, like, the book Connor's reading right now, I'm so... jealous that he's reading it because it's one of my favorite books of all time ever. It's called The Winds of War, and there's two of them, The Winds of War and War and Remembrance, and it's basically a history of World War II, but it's told through telling the story of this one family.
I thought you were referring to something else. There's the Ashes of War or something, which is about World War II, and it's just lots of little accounts. It's a factual book, though, of this happened. And inevitably, then it gets around to the Holocaust and it's very depressing. But anyway,
Well, this book is very depressing in places, but because you're following a fictionalized family, you sort of get to see all the different elements through. Yeah.
Hit me with this. What classics have disappointed you?
That is a good question.
I started reading... To Kill a Mockingbird a while back, and I gave up.
I would like to read To Kill a Mockingbird again.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you can take it off me.
But I would, actually, because when I read it, I was 14 years old.
Yeah.
And doing
it
for school.
Okay.
I don't really remember, because you're doing it for school.
Mm.
So I don't...
I remember book where I'm like, why?
Loving Atticus and Dill and Scout.
Yeah.
Like loving those characters. Yeah. Like really, and I remember being really scared at the point where they're trying to figure out who Boo is, really.
Mm.
But I've never seen the film.
Nor have I.
And I would like to.
Yeah, I should probably just watch the film, get it all done with.
But
here's my statistical breakdown, mathematical breakdown of books.
Okay.
And the problem herein. That if a book is bad and you're reading it, you're like, well, I'll give it a while to get into it, or oh, I guess you have to, you know, just let it go. And like, it's a classic, I'll give it a... Well, I suppose I'm halfway through now. I might as well just... And then you're like, well, might as well just finish it now. But you don't read it fast because it's become like a chore.
Mm.
Okay? So it becomes slow to read.
Well, why don't you just stop?
Well, you should stop. But you often feel compelled because it's a classic, apparently. I'll give it a while to get into it.
Yeah.
Whereas a book that you really enjoy, you're going to read in a matter of a few days.
Yeah.
So it takes months to read a boring book. And days to read a good book. So most of the time, you're reading shit books. This is the problem.
I don't think that's true, though, because I...
Okay, well, I think you'll find that I've done the diagrams and I've proven this
No,
point.
But I don't think... I can't remember the last time I really disliked a book, I stopped reading it.
Yeah.
And it's a book that people have... Like, it was the biggest bookseller last year. And
you
I just...
Name it.
It's The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt. And I just...
Yeah.
I just couldn't... After 110 pages, I said, nope.
Yeah, well, you should. You should stop reading.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And I try to stop reading.
But I think a lot of people do. Like, I don't think people read books they're not enjoying. Because that is a waste of time.
I don't know. I feel like some people do. Like well, I just better get through Ulysses.
But do people read books? Well, that's a different thing. Because I think there are books like Ulysses where people feel like they have to read them because they want to be of a certain... level or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think in general, if you talk to people, you'll say, what was the last book you read that you hated? Most people don't have that. But people have a load of books that they loved.
I do. I have a load of books that I hate.
Well, maybe it's just you.
Stieg Larsson. You, Stieg Larsson, and the girl with the dragon tattoo. Jesus Christ.
Oh, I had so much fun reading that first one.
He died before he could edit out some... pages and pages of background to companies. And then it is both like there's two, like it's a whodunit if you haven't read
it. Yeah, but it's just like that's like pop fiction. That's not.
But what you want from that is a surprise at the end. Whereas the big surprise was in no way a surprise. From the chapter one, I should have written it down and passed it to my friend and said, this is the fucking end of the book. And then the whodunit, like when it's revealed.
Yeah, but these aren't good books. This is like, you know, the Da Vinci Code and stuff. Like, people read them, but nobody thinks they're...
But it's not entertaining.
No, but nobody thinks they're great books, though. And I did find it entertaining while it was happening, even if, like, I think you can find something entertaining even if you kind of know what's going to happen. Like, the Harry Potter books, you know he's going to survive, but you're still gripped through all seven huge books. Because you want to find out what's going to happen.
Well, I give up on that, but...
So but I think this is a problem with you.
Absolutely, it's a problem with me and novels. And
but I don't think these are. I don't think we're talking about. Like, I think like there's some really like the Stieg Larsson books are not good books.
Well, they're good books if they're entertaining, surely.
And they're
that's maybe part of the problem is that some things are considered literature, whereas my favorite writer is Terry Pratchett, who writes just very very readable books, and entertaining books, and I think that. You know, sometimes,
I think there are lots of those out there. And I think a lot of people are reading a lot of those books.
But that's the thing, is there's nothing wrong with entertainment. So if Stieg Larsson was entertaining, I would say it's a good book.
Yeah.
Which it's not.
Yeah, but a lot of people did find it entertaining.
Yeah, well, they are idiots.
Okay, well, that's the opinion. So that's the difference, is that you didn't find it entertaining, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And some people did find it entertaining, and that's okay, too.
That's not okay.
Like, I found the Da Vinci Code highly entertaining.
Right.
But it's a really bad book. Like, it's poorly written.
But I don't get
it's
why...
It's poorly constructed. But I really enjoyed reading it.
Well, then would you say it's a flawed book rather than a bad book? If you were entertained by it, then surely it's good.
I think that's
it's
a different
thing.
I think it's a different thing. Because I think... And I think there are books that I have a hard time getting through insofar as, like what was... Middlemarch. I read Middlemarch a few years ago. And the way that it's written is so... heavy and old-fashioned. The sentences are long. The words are really big. The construction of the sentences is not what we're used to. You couldn't sit on the subway and read this book. And I was living in New York at the time, so I would be sitting on the subway a lot. And in a way, that was difficult, but it was extremely gratifying to actually sit down and really have to focus and use your brain and not simply just fly through it like you would the Da Vinci Code, where it's like, what's happening next?
Yeah.
Like, it was nice to be able to have this giant book where you had to really focus and read things. And it's pretty fantastic. But there are moments where it is a description that isn't necessarily moving the plot forward, but it's very entertaining because it's telling very much specifically about a time and a place and a world that this person has created. And all of that is entertaining.
Yeah.
To most people, or some people.
Apart from, yeah. I mean, I accept that I'm a freak. The last book that I read that I really enjoyed was called One Summer in 1927 by Bill Bryson. And he just tells you lots of
Bill
stuff
Bryson.
That happened in 1927.
Yeah. Well, he's a particularly gifted writer as well, because he's such an easy, you don't think
He's up and down.
It.
Short History of Nearly Everything is great.
Yeah.
Then I read Notes from a Small Country and boring. He's just wandering. It's one of the travel
books
where he just wanders.
Was Notes for the Small Country the one about England?
Yeah, he just wanders around.
Yeah, but he doesn't go to that many interesting places, so.
It's just like, and then I walked over a field. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck
but
up.
But that might be saying more about England than about Bill Bryson.
Maybe. But yeah, it's a really good book.
A Walk in the Woods is also brilliant.
Okay.
That's his while he walked the Appalachian Trail one year. That's fantastic.
So it's One Summer, I hope it's okay to tell this story afterward, that I met up with my agent's husband, Joe O'Shea. So I was talking about, I read this book by Bill Bryson, it's really good. He talks about Lindbergh crossing the Atlantic, and that's one of the stories in it. And so Joe told me a couple of stories about aviation, which I hope I didn't tell you the other night, so now you can be regaled with them.
No, I didn't.
So
you didn't.
He was telling me about this guy called Wrong Way Gary or something, Wrong Way Brian, I can't remember, Wrong Way Dan, something like that. This guy who wanted to be the second person to fly across the Atlantic solo, like Lindbergh, few years later. So he flew from California to New York and checked in with the aviation authority in New York and said, I want to fly across the Atlantic. They said, the weather is not good enough. You cannot fly. So he said, fine, I'll just fly home. So he took off and he just turned around and flew across the Atlantic. And he landed in Ireland and said, oh, where am I? Oh, is this California? And they're like, no, it's Ireland. Oh, Jesus, I must have got it the wrong way around. And so the headlines came out, Wrong Way Dan flies across the Atlantic by mistake. And he stuck to it. Like, he stuck to that story that he just made a mistake, like, I guess till his death. But then the other aviation story Joe told me was about this guy who was in some borough of New York. I think maybe the Bronx. Mm. And this is in the late 1920s something like that. So he's in a bar and he says to this guy, I bet you I can go to New Jersey, ring you from a phone there, and you'll be able to tell because it's like, old fashioned exchange where, they'll say, will you accept a call from New Jersey? Ring you from a phone there and be back within an hour. And so the guy was like, I know that's impossible to do. You couldn't get a horse or a car to go fast enough to do that. So the guy's like, all right, $100 or whatever it was. He heads off. 3/4 of an hour later, rings him from New Jersey. He's like, okay, I'm in New Jersey. He's like, all right, well, good luck. You got another 1/4 of an hour to get back. The guy hangs up the phone, hops into this aerodrome, nicks a plane, and flies to the Bronx, lands on the street there, and just runs into the bar. It's right, $100.
Whoa.
And he got away with a caution. He did do jail time for doing it again 5 years later. Because some guy, he was in a bar and he told the story to some guy, and the guy was like, bullshit, you never did that. It's all right, I'll prove to you, I'll do it again.
So he didn't even get charged for stealing the airplane, he just got a caution the first time?
The caution the first time, yeah. I was like, I cut that shit out.
No, stealing planes.
In the middle of the Bronx.
And was he like, he knew how to fly planes, obviously?
Yeah, I guess he knew how to fly planes.
I mean,
yeah.
I guess he did it.
I guess he figured it out.
Yeah, it happened.
Yeah.
Fact. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Nobody is ever flying tiny planes into streets anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, that is something that I think society is worse off for.
Yeah.
That absolutely. And the fact that there isn't random dinosaurs occasionally walking around. The safe ones, like Triceratops or Stegosaurus.
Just a little stag, yeah.
Yeah. Or a big one. Like, it would be fine if it was its normal size, but it would be so exciting.
I would be.
You'd need dinosaur insurance for your house.
Either a Stegosaurus or a Triceratops coming down.
Yeah, but they
the
were plant eaters.
Yeah, but the horns on a Triceratops,
yeah, but
it's like a rhino.
That makes
imagine
life a lot more exciting. Yeah.
Be terrifying.
Also awesome.
Yeah, yes.
There is a great novel called I Wonder If You Would Like It. It's called Chronic City. It's by Jonathan Lethem, who's a really great author. And this is not my favorite Jonathan Lethem book at all. It's about, well, marijuana usage is one of the big things, but it's about a child film star who grows up and doesn't really have jobs and falls in with this sort of odd crowd. But the whole underlying story is that there's a tiger loose in the city somewhere, and people keep seeing the tiger or not seeing the tiger, like in all of New York City, like there's a tiger loose. And the way he sort of wraps it up at the end is it's good.
Oh.
That just made me think of that. I love the idea that there would be a tiger loose somewhere.
Yeah. Well, that was my idea years ago, or maybe it was myself and Connor's idea. We were doing this hidden camera show at Pilot, and we got Connor to go up to people and say, hi, we're just doing a survey here of some new government schemes that we're thinking about bringing in. And just trying to get feedback from people. And one of them was that, well, there's too many deer in Phoenix Park. And also, of course, you know, the big cats get very restless in there in small cages in the zoo. So for just one day a year, we just release the lions into Phoenix Park and they could just have at the deer. What would you think about that?
Amazing. Then people could, people would pay for safaris. You could go on a safari that day and watch the deer get it.
Yes, get
eaten. Yeah.
I went to London Zoo while I was there.
Did you?
Yeah.
I've never been to London
expensive.
Zoo.
£26 or something.
Whoa.
Jesus. And they don't even have any orangutans.
Not
there.
As expensive as Disneyland.
Yeah. To see fake.
Not even real animals.
Mickey.
Yeah. But you get roller coasters, so.
One of the things we saw, myself and my friend Kelly, was the loneliest turtle in the world.
There's one
river turtle left alive, and he's just swimming there by himself.
Oh, only one?
There's only one. The saddest river turtle.
Are you going to sing the ballad of the sad river turtle?
I should do. Yeah.
I think you should.
Oh, the river turtle. What is it worth? Oh. Still haven't got the right.
We're gonna need to rehearse that a little bit more, kids. Sorry about that.
And then. Then an owl flew at Kelly's head. That was pretty exciting.
Whoa.
Yeah, we were just finished. We were kind of like, oh, I think that's it. I think that's all of the zoo. And we saw then there was a tent with some people and there was a show on. So we walk towards the tent and then this woman had an owl. Kelly didn't even notice it. She had an owl on her arm by the side of the tent. And the owl kind of flapped and then didn't go anywhere. So I thought, oh, it's attached to the owl's arm. But then maybe she let it go or something, and it just flew straight at Kelly's head, and then just suddenly over it. And it was just kind of terrifying for Kelly. She just suddenly, and I was like, "This is brilliant! Look at that owl go for Kelly!"
Like Hedwig from Harry Potter.
Yeah,
I love owls. I had an amazing owl experience in Connecticut, where a giant barn owl flew right over my head and just down and on, like down on the road in front of me, and then up and out. It's amazing.
Nice.
That's the end of that story. Also, I have a song about that, but I'll save it for next week.
Nice.